I'm Ron Solo on this podcast.
Rolling? He's not solo. I'm right here.
I was trying to get you for Kel, put his headset on there. We're doing our annual sports broadcasting before sports the broadcast.
Broadcasting of the week.
Because so many people hate to hear that when we're doing the podcasting.
I feel like Jennifer hates it.
All the girls hate the sports talk.
It's okay.
If we made a Hurricane sports podcast, we'd probably have about 10, 15 listeners.
Probably.
Maybe less.
I feel like probably, honestly, like 60%, maybe 65% of people that listen to this are women.
I say more often than not, when somebody more says women. Anything about the podcast is a girl than sure. is a guy. I don't think any of the dudes listen to it hardly.
There's some guys that I know in the afternoon that listen to it.
Oh, really?
But I don't know about the morning people, so I don't know. But maybe Leland. I know Leland does.
Okay. We're talking about the McNeese basketball team.
Yeah.
This is probably the most hype I've seen around any, at least
since I've been here.
Well, being younger when McNeese had the really good football program at the time.
Okay.
In the late 90s and early 2000s. I'm sure there was a lot of hype around that time as well. But I was too young to remember.
To remember all that?
Like, I was late elementary school, middle school in that time frame. So I don't really remember a whole lot about. Like, I remember they went to the national championship game. I want to say that was maybe 2001, maybe.
That's all you, my guy.
2001 is right around that area is when they went to the national championship game. And I remember a lot of people going to the game. I think it was in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Okay.
When they played the national championship game. So obviously a lot of hype around that year, and they had some really good seasons. And even when I was in college, they had some really good regular seasons in football where, they'd only lose two or three games. Then inevitably they'd lose in the first round of the playoffs. I don't think they made it out of the first round in a long time. But probably the last 10, 15 years is the most hype I've seen around a McNeese team in a while.
Like I said, at least since I've been on this green earth, this is definitely the most hype I think I've seen around anything around us.
Yeah.
But it's pretty cool. I can see the community and even the people at the gym are hyped up about it, mm-hmm. Talking about it, and everybody's posting about it on Facebook. So I'm glad that we have something to kind of strive for and maybe get happy about.
It kind of makes me a little bit more, because for the longest, what I kind of mean by this is, McNeese is a little bit always overshadowed by LSU, obviously. Oh, okay. But it gives me a little bit of hope that if McNeese comes around in any sports program, generally basketball, football, baseball, that if they have enough wins and enough hype around them, that the community will actually support them.
Support them, yeah.
To a degree.
And if you get support, more than LSU, that's better coaches that you get. Because I'm assuming my guy Will Wade's not staying for too long.
Maybe another year.
Yeah, maybe he stays next year. I definitely think that what he's done here is going to make sure that we get another decent coach. You're not going to just go from this to some just
Joe Schmo.
Yeah, right. But also, the more athletes that you're getting for Bangs basketball means hopefully that trickles over into a football. Maybe that trickles mm-hmm. into a baseball. They're pretty good at baseball. It's not like they're bad at baseball, I don't think. So I think it would be pretty cool.
It'd be interesting. Well, that's always one thing. If you look at UL, Lafayette, they're all about UL and Lafayette.
Sure, yeah.
There's not a whole lot of LSU stuff going on in UL. To a degree,
You're seeing Lafayette flags everywhere.
Yeah, and you go pretty much anywhere else in the state, even in New Orleans or Shreveport or Lake Charles, it's all LSU-based. And so maybe you start to see a little bit of a transition to a little bit more 50-50, where it's not so much always about LSU, but it's a little more
Because even if it's not LSU, it's LSUS or LSUE,
Yeah.
I know even LSUE, the Eunice softball team over there is they're fucking amazing.
Right? I think even the baseball program, in Alexandria or Shreveport, they win the national champion in their certain JUCO league every year.
Yeah, exactly. It's hard when you have even LSU's not their top tier programs are doing well. It's hard to overshadow that.
Yeah.
But this is a good start. This is a good start.
For sure. Well, I guess it needs to cut off our sports talk. We can't exceed 5 minutes into a podcast talking about sports.
Someone the other day told me, he's like, I think it was Trevor, he's like, man, y'all just need to start talking about sports.
Well, if that was the case, Kale would now be the frontier guy.
Like, dude, we'll just talk about sports and then we can have our own little podcast.
Nothing to do with fitness whatsoever.
It's like, no fitness, just sports.
The Hurricane CrossFit Sports Podcast. going to number one. Also, just a reminder, if you guys have not got your gym shirt.
You got one more day.
You got today, if you're listening to it on the 1st of February, and you got tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
February 2nd, it's a deadline. So if you have not done that already, make sure you guys do that. You got a little bit more time to get that done. But today, we're kind of in that weird phase of the podcast right now. We're kind of having a hard time coming up with subjects.
We're trickling in.
We're trying to reach for things right now. And so I don't want to waste multiple topics in one podcast, but at the same time, I don't want it to be a 20-minute podcast either. So you had kind of mentioned this before, kind of talking about the subject for today was pre-workout fuel.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess you could also talk like post-workout fuel as well. But like, what's the best approach to obviously what you're going to eat to have the best performance in the gym and also feel the best in the gym as well? And one little caveat to that is, even if performance isn't necessarily like your number one priority, if it's just general health or looking better, that still plays a key role inside the gym is what you eat pre and post, right? So they're all in line with each other because, you know, to a degree, your nutrition can kind of go down one of three paths, like one being health, one being performance, and one being aesthetic, right? And they all kind of go in the same direction for a period of time, and then they kind of start diving off from one another. But when it comes to like pre-workout fuel, they're kind of all still the same, intrinsically the same thing. You wouldn't necessarily, if you're trying to program a nutrition plan for somebody who's in any one of those three buckets, they would all still look relatively the same as like pre and post workout meals. So regardless of what your goal is, you can still use this as an idea for yourself going forward for your workout pre and post nutrition. So like you said, do you want to throw that person on the bus again?
I'm not going to throw that.
You're not going to throw a person on the bus? Oh, man, because I know exactly who you're...
I'm not going to throw it, but we're going to talk about it, and I know she listens to the podcast, so she's...
So she probably knows that.
She'll know who we're talking about.
Okay. I don't even know. You didn't even say her name. I don't even know.
I'll tell you after.
So, very simplistically, is that a word? Very simply.
You just made it one.
Very simply. The best approach to your pre- and post-workout meals is that you want your fat intake to be low. Like low meaning probably anywhere from 0 to 10 grams. Anything more than that, you're more than likely going to run into issues with digestive issues that's going to impede your performance inside the gym. Think of it just like when you're a kid and your mom was like, don't drink milk and go play soccer.
Same concept.
It's the same concept, right? Because fat takes longer for your body to digest, right? And that blood is being used in your digestive tract. And the longer it has to stay in there to digest that fat intake, the worse you're going to feel in your workout, right? Because once that blood now leaves, because now the heart's pumping at 108 beats per minute, you're going to feel nauseous and you're going to feel obviously run down in your workout and more lethargic. So the most simplistic version of this is to keep your fat low, keep your carbohydrate. I would say, depending on the person and what their goals are, but it's a little bit relative, but you want to have carbohydrates pre and post, depending on how much volume that you're eating in a day can vary, obviously. So if somebody's eating 150 grams of carbohydrates compared to somebody's eating 300 grams of carbohydrates, that's going to look different. But you definitely want to have some type of form of carbohydrate pre and post workout. And that's the most important thing. I think we're kind of programmed to think like protein is the most important thing. And it's actually carbohydrate. Well, you think like I need to have protein post workout, especially, right? Because it's the muscle building window.
You gotta hit the anabolic window.
Yeah, the anabolic window. You gotta have the protein. And it's actually not your body's primary objective is not to all of a sudden go back to like rebuilding muscle mode. It's to replenish the glycogen inside the muscle, which is essentially a carbohydrate. So very simply, your body wants to replenish that first before necessarily rebuilding the muscle to get stronger and better, right? So the best practice is having a carbohydrate and protein source pre and post-workout. Now, what that looks like for a protein source can vary, but with the caveat saying that fat needs to be low, you're a little bit more restricted on what protein sources are available to you, mm-hmm. right? So I'm not going to eat like red meat or peanut butter or orange fish or yogurt or yogurt as my protein pre-workout, right? It could be like a protein powder. It could be like a chicken breast. It could be shrimp, white fish as an example, right? I could do that pre and post workout and then pairing it up with another carbohydrate. And everybody's going to be a little different on what carbohydrate is going to work best for them. Like for instance, some people could do rice and they feel perfectly fine. It digests really well. For some people, eating rice gets them bloated, right? Same thing like sweet potato. Like some people feel really good on sweet potato and some people feel like they get bloated on sweet potato. And even to a degree, like some fruits like that, like apples for some people, they can feel bloated on. Some.
Have you ever heard apples are terrible?
What do you mean?
I don't know. I feel like that's going around Instagram.
They're horrible for you to eat?
They're the worst fruit for you to eat.
Well, you've ever...
I don't know.
It's so...
I'm torn on that.
Well, it's so stupid. Like, have you ever seen those little real memes where the person like takes out some bread and the person's like, don't eat anything that's grainy. And then like throws out, and he's like, and he gets out the thing of apples, like, don't eat apples. Don't the worst thing ever. If you totally use social media as your guide to what food choices you should be making, you feel like you couldn't eat anything.
Sure.
Because everything's poisonous to your body. Keep it simple. Whole food option. So if it should be like a single ingredient meal is the best probably approach to what you're doing, right? Like it shouldn't have an ingredient list of 15 different things where most of them you can't even describe or even know what it is. Like for instance, if you go pull up an apple, it's a fucking apple.
An apple.
There's no ingredient list there. And so that's how you want to think about when it comes to your best nutritional practices is keeping things very, very simple in the way of ingredient list. So choosing the carbohydrate source for yourself is going to vary from person to person, but you want to choose something that you know digests relatively easy inside your system, right? For most people, they kind of know what that is. Also, you can be a little bit experimental from week to week and try different carbohydrate sources to see which one feels the best on you. And then when it comes to timing of that, it's going to vary from person to person. For some people, they can do 30 minutes pre-workout, eat something, and they feel perfectly fine. For most, I would probably say you're more likely to go anywhere from like a 90 to a 2 hour window is probably better for most before you work out.
I feel like that's like your safe bet.
That's probably your most safe bet. So if I'm working out at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I probably want to have a meal or like some type of pre-workout meal between 2 and 2:30, right? So that could be a protein shake with some grapes as an example. Mm-hmm. And then post-workout, it's not like you have to. A lot of researchers kind of debunked it because back in the day, I know when I was kind of growing through the fitness realm, it's kind of like as I was learning things as like a teenager and going into college, that it was like a real big thing that you had to get in something like immediately post-workout, like you had to or you're going to miss like out on all your gains that you just made. And it's really kind of been debunked. You do ideally want to probably have something post-workout, probably within a two-hour window post-workout is probably optimal just to replenish your glycogen and get your energy levels back to normal. But it's not like you have to have something in your gym bag immediately post-workout. You have to eat something right then. You do want to probably still keep your fat on a little bit lower end. It's not that it has to be. You have a little bit more window to have more fat if you need to. So if I get done working out at 5 o'clock and I'm going to eat dinner at 6 or 7 and I have fat in there, it's not like it's going to kill my gains, right? Like, but with the utilization of a carbohydrate, it just makes it a little bit slower of a digest rate when your body really wants that glycogen. But at the end of the day, we got to think about what's realistic and what's optimal, and sometimes they aren't in line with each other. I would just say, obviously, you just need to have something post-workout. The worst thing you probably do is go work out at 6 o'clock class, and you get done at 7, and you're going to bed at 8, and you haven't had anything to eat post-workout. You want to have something post-workout. Now, for you guys that are like early birds, obviously, that doesn't necessarily go to like that's not necessarily what's going to be working best for you. You're not going to wake up at 3 in the morning and have a pre-workout meal.
Sure.
your post or your nighttime meal is what's going to help you utilize the next morning. So definitely have some carbohydrates that night. That way your glycogen stores are still full when you wake up in the morning. You have your something to utilize when you go to work out, right? Because let's say you're going lower carb and you don't eat carbohydrates past noon, and you're trying to work out at 4:45 in the morning,
it's gonna be
probably gonna feel more run down in your workouts. Your energy levels are probably gonna plummet. You feel like you're not breathing well during your workouts, things like that. So you definitely still want to fill in some carbohydrates at nighttime if you're an early bird. Now you could maybe have like half a banana in the morning or something like that as like an option to you, but more than likely most of you guys aren't waking up and eating before you come.
Right. Would you recommend like a carbion or something like that for people in the morning? You could kind of like the same purpose. Like, well, you're still gonna feel kind of weird.
Well, just yeah, I mean, so what he means by that, like when he says carbion, it's all just a powder carbohydrate. Mm-hmm. The benefits of doing that is that it's done in a liquid form, so it's real easy to get down. There's no chewing involved. So if you want a quick, easy, convenient option, you could look in, and they're pretty relatively cheap, mm-hmm. different carb powders. But
normally they don't taste that bad either.
No. It's got some sodium in there and stuff like that. Especially post-workout, they're real convenient to get down because at least I know for me, especially during the summer.
Yeah.
When, you know,
it's super hot.
Fucking 98 degrees outside and you're sweating your ass off and you don't really, your core temperature is so high that you really don't feel like eating anything for at least an hour or two after workout. That works for me really well. But for most people, I think just having some type of carbohydrate source through a regular whole food option is perfectly fine as well. But if you want something a little bit easier to get down in the mornings, you can maybe do like a carb powder of some kind. So that would be your best approach to like pre and post workout fueling. I think a lot of you guys don't really think about that and how that can affect your workouts. I think sometimes we get solely focused on like just the training, sure. and like why do I feel like crap today, but I feel really good tomorrow. And it's gotta be like, my training's gotta be affected. A lot of that has to do with nutrition. It doesn't mean necessarily you're going to come in every single day and feel like you're ready to kill it, but you'd be amazed how much better you can feel in your workouts if you properly fuel yourself. Now, obviously, if you're eating like shit the other meals of your day, you still got room for improvement there, yeah. but it's still a step in the right direction.
This isn't going to fix all your problems.
But. Yeah, it's not a silver bullet.
Yeah.
Like, I heard this, I think I said it before, and it kind of reminded me the day I was listening to a podcast and the guy was kind of talking about it. He was talking about, it wasn't necessarily health related, but you know, people are always kind of looking like for the silver bullets. Like, there's already no silver bullets, it's just 100 golden BBs. You know what I mean? So it's like people are always looking like for like the one big thing.
Okay.
That's gonna like
fix
click, right? So, like this one thing is gonna fix everything, right? It's a silver bullet. When it's like it's a bunch of little bitty things okay. that really make all the changes, right? It's not like, you know, people were looking for the, like, what's the one supplement that I can take that's going to change it? That's a silver bullet that's going to help fix all my problems,
I like
right?
That.
It's like, it's not the supplement that you take. It's right. It's like what you take for pre-workout meal, like what's your post-workout meal? What's your sleep look like? You know, how consistent are you coming to the gym?
It's like
all these little bitty things are ultimately what make the overall package. And I think a lot of us are like, well, it's got to be like this one thing that's wrong. Like, it's just one thing. It's not like all these other things. It's one thing.
I'm just doing one bad thing.
Yeah. And it's like, it's not really like the one. It's a bunch of other holistic things that we got to, like, if you can ramp up, like, all these little areas, like, 1%, like, that makes that all the changes in the world. And so, I think sometimes when it comes to our gym performance, right, like, we don't really think about nutrition as, like, something that can help fuel myself, per se. Because, well, in actuality, if your workouts are less intense, your results are also less because of it, right? Like, if you're suffering in the gym because you're not fueling properly, well, your progress also slows up. If you can go to the gym and be able to have like a 5-10 extra percent output every single day,
that adds up.
If you start multiplying that over weeks and months and years, like how much further along you could be because of that, compared to when you're run down and you're just kind of checking the box and the intensity and the intention's not there, obviously progression and progress starts to slow up because of that, right? You're still making progress, right? But not as much as you possibly could. Because
you're not maxing your potential.
Right? Yeah, because of that. And so it's not a very complicated equation when it comes to like pre and post workout meals, but that's the kind of summary of it is like keep your fat pretty low, especially pre-workout. Have some type of carbohydrate and protein, especially pre and post, and the timing of that pre-workout should be somewhere between an hour to 2 hours, depending on the person, how well they digest that. Try that out for a few weeks and let me know how it goes.
I feel like it'll make a difference if you actually try this and give it a fair shot.
On how consistently you're doing
exactly.
That. But so that was kind of like part one of this, I guess.
Also, I want to say I'm very impressed with everybody's consistency challenges so far.
So far,
I feel like everybody's doing a pretty decent job.
Well, the people that are actually doing it, right?
The people that are posting their stuff.
Yes.
I'm very proud of everybody that's doing it.
Well, because that group has like over 100 people. Yeah. I want to say that when we do the check-ins,
you get like 80-ish.
I don't know if we're even getting that many.
Really?
I think it's probably close to like 50.
Like 50? Okay.
So you're talking like maybe half to like 40% are doing it. I think the other ones were motivated at first. And maybe the first week didn't go so well. They're like, oh, fuck it.
I'm not doing this shit. I'm not doing it. Well, I looked at this past... I think you had like 80 this past week.
Okay.
And I was like, well, look at everybody go. That's pretty cool.
I'm really excited to see... Because this is week number 4. And obviously, at the end of the 6 weeks, you redo your in-body.
Oh, yeah.
So that's actually what I'm most excited for, to kind of see the fruits of the labor.
Like the changes.
Yeah, to see kind of how that affects. I'm hoping because of that, obviously, some people will kind of open up their eyes like, okay, if I stay with this on a consistent enough, on a long enough timeline, like, how much further I could really go.
Like, this happened in 6 weeks. Like, imagine if you did this for, like, a year.
Yeah. And it's like, it's not... Nothing overly that complicated.
Well, I think everybody thought it was going to be this super complicated thing, but the people that have been doing it consistently every week, I feel like they're starting to realize like it's really not that big of a change.
Well, it's more so
like if you're bitching about the steps being the hardest thing, like it really couldn't have been that much of a difference for you. I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, I think because it's still the steps. I think for most people are the hardest part. And for the most part, most people have actually done a really good job on the nutritional side.
Yeah, that's what I say. Like meal prepping and stuff. Like people are actually like posting their foods and stuff, and like they're even telling me in the afternoon that they've been meal prepping on Sundays, and I'm like, okay, that's awesome.
And for most, that's usually the hard part is the food section of it. And so, I'm hoping people start to realize that this isn't a very complicated case scenario. It's just a fact of being prepared each week.
Yeah.
For what you have ahead, and then just repeating that cycle over and over and over again for a long enough timeline. I think sometimes we get fooled into the marketing of social media and whatever else that have you. Like, it's going to be this fantastic, crazy journey, and it's really just a bunch of boring shit over and over and over again that really gets you to the end result at the end of the day. Like, it's just washing, repeating that same play on a long enough timeline that'll get you there, but it's just more so of who's willing to endure that process to get there, right? And do the boring things over and over and over and over and over again. I saw something the other day. They were talking about Steph Curry.
Yeah.
And I think it was like Tony Robbins or something like that. And basically the whole general principle was, I forgot like some stupid amount of shots Steph Curry would take in practice. Compared to how many shots he's actually shot in a game. And it was like less than 1%.
In a game.
Compared to what he's actually taken in his life.
That's pretty cool.
It was like over 2.5 million shots that he's accumulated in his career. And I think in his career he's only taken 15,000 shots.
In total? Oh, that's nuts.
Something like that. Okay, the numbers are not exactly like
1%. You get the point.
But basically he was just saying like, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, he's a natural, is God-given. And he's like, what you don't see is the 2.5 million shots that he didn't take in front of anybody, right? And, like, that's the boring shit, right? But you see him on the court, and he looks all flashy, he looks so cool, right? Like, it just, like, comes to him so easy. And I think some people apply that to fitness where they're like, well, it's just so God-given. He's so great at, you know, being fit, or he's so self-disciplined, or she is.
Months of practice that they've been doing.
Are you even like see when they start off, like where they were before they even started the process and like how far they've come and how long it took them to get that far, right? Like Lacey's like a primary example of somebody where people will kind of make those comments like, oh, you know, I'm just not as disciplined as you, or I wish I could look like you, or whatever it may be. If you look at pictures, Lacey, before she got into fitness, I mean, she looks like a normal soccer mom who, you know, looks like she's never really worked out a day in her life, or it's been a really long time. And it took her, you know, 7-8 years to get to that.
She's a professional volleyball player.
Exactly, yeah. Breaking her foot. But it took her 7-8 plus years to get where she is now, right? But nobody really wants to talk about that. They want to look at somebody where they are now, and they expect to be where that person is now in a matter of just like a couple weeks. And then, like, that's not how it works. It's the boring over and over again. And I think obviously some people have done a really great job of that. Like, I mean, we have members here who should have been here over 10 years now, right? Like, and consistent members, not just people who like have a membership here and like show up every so often. I'm talking about members who have been here
people
for a long, long time. But when it comes to like a nutritional standpoint, I think that's probably the harder thing, because the working out sometimes is the fun part, right? Like coming here, breaking a sweat and shooting the shit and having a good time. It's nutrition is way harder in my opinion, just because you know there's other things out there you could be eating that taste a hell of a lot better and a lot more enjoyable. And you're always like tempted with things. Temptation's always
it's
there.
It's not like you're always like, it's not like you're going to see a cupcake and like a bowl of rice and chicken and say, oh, I can't wait to eat this bowl of rice and chicken. Like, you're always going to want to eat the damn cupcake.
Sure. I don't think that ever goes away, obviously. But so you're always tempted with things. And, you know, it's hard to have that discipline and willpower for so long. Mm-hmm. You know, you can do it for a couple of days, right? Or even a couple of weeks, maybe best couple of months. But a lot of people, right, it's hard to carry that over for years and years and years and years. And I think over time you start to, you find where that gray area is, where I think sometimes things like black and white, it's either like you're all pizza and cupcakes, or you're all chicken and rice, and there's nowhere in between. I think on a long enough timeline, you start to find that gray area where that sweet spot is for a lot of people. But you got to go through the trials and errors of getting there first. And a lot of people don't ever get to that point. They kind of do the chicken and rice for a couple of weeks, and they go right back to the 180 in the opposite direction for a couple of months, if not a couple of years. And so it takes a little while to kind of ramp your way there, but you got to endure the process to get there. So, anything else you want to add to the fueling of the pre and post workout?
I don't think so.
No. Do we want to go to this other topic or no?
It's up to you.
Right now we're at 28 minutes in.
28? I'm bouncing that ball to your side of the court. He's got a smirk on his face. So I don't know.
I don't know where I'll call it right now or not. Well, the other idea that we have to talk about is, which I know we've touched on this before on the podcast, is when and how often you should scale a workout.
Okay.
And I'm gonna ask more of the questions on this standpoint.
Okay.
So one question that Bryce always has is, should you be basing this off, like, if I'm gonna scale a workout, right? Let's say we have a workout that has 315-pound deadlifts.
Sure.
As an example. Okay, my max is 315 pounds. Okay, I'm not doing it for reps in a workout. What percentage should I use of my max for this workout? And like, what's usually your answer to something like that?
For one, it would depend how many reps they're doing in the workout, right? So like, I mean, if they're doing 5 reps at a time compared to like 15 reps at a time, like that's going to look totally different.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say the workout's 315. Let's say Bryce's max is 315. Let's say there's 10 deadlifts in the workout, right, per round. I'm probably going to suggest, if his goal is to get stronger and get better at deadlifts or just in general build muscle, I would probably say probably like 225. That's probably the guesstimate I would give. But the biggest thing is, like, I don't want you pulling 225 and your back rounding for all 10 reps, right? Mm-hmm. I still want it to be a challenging weight, maybe something like, let's say it is 10 reps. You're still going to probably have to break up 2-3 times, right? And you're just going to have to take that station and you're going to have to realize, like, okay, my goal is to get stronger. I'm probably going to be a little bit slower here today, right? And I'm probably going to get behind a little bit, but that's my goal and I'm going to stick to it for a little while, right? And so I don't know how you feel about that, but I mean, essentially it's like, you're going to have to take a step back before you can go a step forward. And if that means you're going to be a little bit slower on deadlifts that day or a little bit slower on back squats, whatever it is that day, if you're truly wanting to get stronger, you're going to have to eventually go up in weight and challenge yourself a little bit. So you can't just pick something that you're going to knock out for 10 unbroken reps and expect to get stronger.
Well, as like an example, the reason why this is, you can't give an exact...
It's a super relative question, right?
Well, so what I mean with this, so like the question is, you know, should I use percentages based off the lifts of my best lift to determine if I should do a certain weight in the WOD? The problem is with that is you have people who are able to operate better with higher percentages in WODs compared to other people. So as an example of this, let's say you take me and Kale, and we both can deadlift 405 pounds.
Okay.
Right? What, or actually, I lie. Let's say your max deadlift is 500 pounds.
Okay.
My max deadlift is 365 pounds.
Okay.
Right? So let's say we get into a workout that has 275, right? Like, well, you would think, oh, well, he's got a higher deadlift. Kale should be able to just beat me in this workout now because it's a heavy deadlift. And Kelvin out deadlift me. That's not always the case. Because you do have people, think like a power lifter, who has a really high threshold to pull for one rep. But now you're having this person deadlift for multiple reps at like 50% of their max. And they die out compared to a guy who maybe has a 200 pound less deadlift. And is trying to pull the same load as that guy, the powerlifter. Even though the powerlifter has more and stronger, he doesn't have the aerobic endurance to be able to pull that for multiple, multiple reps, right? So some people can operate at a higher threshold, closer to their warrant max, compared to some other people who maybe have a higher threshold where they have fast twitch and they can really put an output for a short period of time. But on a long enough duration, they drop off tremendously, right? They're not able to operate closer to the 100% compared to somebody else. Think of it like a Dodge Challenger and a Honda Civic.
Sure.
Right? Like, if you put the Challenger, like, hey, we're going to go across the country, probably you're going to break down the process, right, compared to the Honda Civic, which just gets putt-putt all the way down and stay steady at, like, 90% of its max, right? Well, if you put the Challenger at 90% of its max, it's not going to be able to endure as long.
Have you ever seen the road challenges where they take, like, the CrossFitters and the powerlifters and the weightlifters and they all do, like, a challenge? Well, essentially, they did like a deadlift challenge at 315, right? And so, like, all these Olympic lifters and all these power lifters, obviously, their maxes are way more than most of these CrossFit athletes. But the two CrossFit athletes end up being like first. Mm-hmm. One of them wins it, and then the other one's like third on it, right? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like what you're saying right there, essentially.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, and that's why it's hard to put percentage based on, because there's plenty of guys I can go from I can go down to club four. And grab a guy who's strong,
sure,
right? And then I put him in a CrossFit workout that has 225 pound deadlifts. And at first, he might be able to crush the 225 pound deadlifts. But when you start pairing it up with running or biking or pull ups or push ups, that guy also now struggling at 225, right?
Hitting failure
really super easy, because now his aerobic threshold is not super high. He can't operate at that high threshold for very long. So that's where it's really hard to give a percentage number, mm-hmm. because based off that alone. If we were doing percentage work like strength, yes, that's obviously what we program that for, and that's why we program percentages. But when it comes to a WOD-based thing, so the only time you would maybe say percentage is, for example, of let's say you have 225-pound cleans in a workout, mm-hmm. where you maybe tell somebody like, hey, you should not exceed 80% of your max in a workout, right? As an example, as a suggestion for something in a workout, right? Like, you shouldn't be exceeding certain percentages of your max in this workout today.
this is bringing up a question for me for you.
Okay.
And I have a way that I feel about it, so I'm curious to know. Let's say your max strict press is 150 pounds, okay? And you're going off our percentages that we're giving, okay? How do you feel about people maybe going off of
their best lift?
Not their best
lift. Like a heavier lift?
Yeah, like maybe like what they want to achieve. Like for me, like if I ever wanted to PR my back squat, let's say my back squat was 350 pounds, I would never go off my percentages of 350. I would always go off of like, hey, I want to hit 365. I'm going to do my percentages off 365. And if I can't hit that percentage that day, I'll just back it off to the original percentage.
It's not a bad idea. It's just that the only caveat I would say to that is you got to be real cautious on how much more your percentages are going to go up. Like,
well, that's the thing. Like, you can't pick like...
Well, I can't be like, I'm back squat 315 currently, and then exactly. I'm trying to back squat 405.
Like, you have to be realistic with it. But like, I mean, like for strict press, for instance, I'm not going to go off at 20 extra pounds on my strict mm-hmm. press. Like, right? If I'm trying to do strict press, I'm going to be realistic and say, okay, I'm probably only going to be PRing by like 5 pounds anyway. So... Yeah. Maybe instead of 105 going off my true max, I might do like 110.
Yeah. I don't think it's a horrible idea. I think and everybody's a little different on what they can handle on that. What I find with some people, if they do that, and it kind of goes back to the same thing we're just talking about. Let's say you, as an example, I use the 150 strict press as an example, and you're trying to strict press 160. Mm-hmm. On the lower volume numbers wise, let's say you're doing like sets of three, mm-hmm. you probably pull it off. But for some people, let's say you're doing like sets of eight probably at like 60% of that max, those usually tend to be harder to come by for some people compared to the lower numbers. It just depends on the person, right? If you're more enduring of an athlete, you probably could pull those numbers off, mm-hmm. right? But if you're a higher threshold person where your output's really high, you're probably the opposite of that. You probably can pull off the lower numbers, but now the higher numbers you have a harder time with. It kind of depends on the athlete and the person. Usually how that tends to fare is your guys that are your stronger guys, like your top end strength guys, are usually not the most enduring athletes, right? Sure. Just how they're kind of genetically formed. And the guys that are, you know, usually maybe underneath that to like middle of the pack when it comes to strength are usually more your enduring athletes, right? So that's kind of like the beautiful thing of CrossFit is being that guy that is able to do all these things, right? Where yes, you might be 20 pounds lighter on a certain lift, but now I can also operate at a higher threshold closer to that warm max, where this bigger person has maybe a little bit higher threshold, but they have to operate way lower down that threat of that on that scale. And you'll see guys that come in here that come from a traditional bodybuilding type program. And they come in here and you're like, oh yeah, we're gonna use, you know, 50-pound dumbbells for dumbbell bench press. Like, sure. Oh bro, I can bench press that for 300 reps, you know? And their heart rate gets to 160, 180, and you're doing box jumps and biking and jump rope, and all of a sudden now they're doing sets of five on 50-pound dumbbells, right? And it's kind of an eye-opener, right? Like even comes like push-ups when you got a guy that's like, oh, I can knock out 70 push-ups, no problem, unbroken. And then all of a sudden they get in the workout, they're doing sets of three.
Yeah.
Right? Like it's a little bit humbling in the process, but that's kind of the fun thing about CrossFit overall. But yeah, that's the reason why we don't normally program percentages in a wad. We've done it a couple times.
There's one specifically that we've done a few times with the front squat one.
Well, usually we do that as kind of like we haven't done one in a while. I need to program one. A strength wad.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you're doing something like a lot of times the last couple ones that we did, it's been a while. It's probably back in over the summer, the spring, last time we really done one, where I usually try to program it in an interval base where it's like, I think the last one we do is maybe the back squat one.
I think so.
Where it was like every 6 minutes, it was like an 80-meter run, 40 push-ups. And then it was like,
eight back squats?
Was it like five or six back squats?
Like I remember being kind of like a higher volume squat.
Yeah. I think it was it based off percentages or not?
I think so, because I think I remember people doing, I think I remember Trevor bitching about how he had to do a certain amount of weight. And I remember you being like, Trevor, that's like, not even close to what like most people had to do.
Yeah. So I don't remember if it was percentage based or it was like, you know, work up to a heavy six or something along those lines. And that's what you would call like more like a strength wide, where there's no given number to the prescription on the weight. And you have the opportunity to lift heavy under a little bit of fatigue, but I try to program in a way where you guys aren't under extreme fatigue.
Those are fun though.
Those seem to be more the fun workouts, right? Fun. Where you're breaking a sweat, you feel like you got some work in, but you also got to lift heavy. And sometimes you end up feeling better during those workouts.
Sometimes you're surprised. I know for me, like, I've always, sometimes like a lot of my PRs that I've ever hit are like in the middle of a workout.
When you got like a lot of blood flow and your joints are moving really well, and you kind of almost like your brain kind of turns off a little bit and you just kind of just do it.
I don't think about it as much.
Yeah. Compared to when you're just kind of doing it as like your first thing for the day and you're not like super sweaty and warmed up, it hits a little bit different, right? And so you can pretty much guarantee in the open that's probably, I don't know, they didn't do anything like that last year where they did a wad into a lift.
The thruster.
Oh, they did. Did they have one max thruster? Yeah, was that the shuttle run one?
No, that was the. I don't remember exactly what it was, but I remember because it was shuttle run and just burpee pull ups.
Mm-hmm.
Did you do it after that?
I want to say it's after shuttle run and burpee pull up. You did the thruster, right?
It might have been. Yeah, I think it was.
Because the first workout, the last workout was the snatch, Dubliner handstand push up one. I want to say maybe was like the last open workout. I can't remember the first one was.
I can't remember.
That's when I hurt my knee, so I didn't do any of the workouts.
I remember thruster, but I don't remember thruster in like a lot of reps. I remember it was just like...
I think it was just the warm max thruster from the floor.
I think so.
But usually a typical thing in the open that you'll see is a Metcon followed by a max lift of some kind or a complex of some kind. Usually it's like a part A, part B, where you know, you're doing this for... It could be one of different examples. It could be an AMRAP, where everybody's doing like 10-minute AMRAP.
Sure.
And then you got 5 minutes to go... And you have 5 minutes directly going into a lift. That's kind of one example they'll choose. Another example is you have this workouts for time, and if you finish early, you bank in more rest, and then you start the lift. Or sometimes they're like, hey, you do the workout, and you have that for time, and then it's a 20-minute time cap for the workout, right? And most people are finishing like at 14, 15 minutes. Yeah. And the faster you finish, the more time you get to lift, as an example. And also they do workouts where it's an extending ladder of weights, where the further you go to the workout, the weight gets heavier and heavier.
Okay, so normally that's like, that style's like built into the workout.
Yeah, it's more like a wad. It's not necessarily like a single individual lift. Those are kind of your more primary examples. Which one's your favorite?
I like the for time.
So you just like the... What do you mean, like?
So, like, for instance, like the, I don't really know if you remember, like the dumbbell squat bar face and burpee.
Yep.
Right. So I think.
And into like the max squat. And into the warm max squat.
Yeah. Clean. You had like a 6 minute time cap. You finish early. You got the rest, but at 6 minutes, your strength, your one rep max power clean started. Right. So
okay.
The faster you finish, pretty much.
So you more time you like the more of like do the wad. Time cap at certain point in time into the lift.
Yeah.
That's more so your jam?
I never, like, I don't know. Like I said, I was always able to, like, kind of, like, do higher percentages, like, under fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of enjoyed that. I always felt like I did better because everybody else sucked at it.
Yeah.
So I just enjoyed it.
I don't know. I'm trying to think, like, which ones were the more exciting ones.
I've never PR'd just doing a strength piece.
Oh, like, just a straight, like, hey, just do a warm max back squat?
Never.
You've always PR'd in a wad?
Always either PR'd in a rod or, like, right after a wad.
Really?
Never.
Wow, that's interesting.
I think the only time that I can remember was the last time I PR'd my front squat was the only time I've ever done that.
No shit.
Yep.
I'm trying to think like what's been the more exciting ones as a coach and or athlete. Because the ones I think are one of the more fun ones are the ones where you have a bunch of time caps built into the workout.
Sure.
Where it's like an ascending ladder, right? Where you have to do X amount of reps inside like a 4 minute time frame, right? And if you do it, did you get to move on to the next one, right?
The next round, yeah.
And seeing athletes who are like right on the cusp of breaking to the next round and they either do it or don't do it kind of deal, those are always fun. Or doing the warm-up lifts are fun too, like where you have somebody do a Metcon and then you know you have this little bit of recovery time and then go into a
that's
max lift. It depends on how wad drunk they are.
Well, that's the thing, is like, it's just, it depends. The Open's so fun because, like, a lot of times you do it the first time and, like, you may send the workout, right? And then you get to this wad and you're like 50 pounds under your max, right? Well, and so it's just very bad.
I remember Jacob Guillory doing that dumbbell squat burpee workout. So the workout was 1 up to 10. So 1, 1, 2, 2, 3, 3. Dumbbell squats and bar facing burpees. And this dude went as hard as he possibly could. And then I think you said like it was like maybe like a 6 minute time cap or 8 minute time cap.
Exactly what it was.
And then you had X amount of time to find a max clean, I think was the what it was. And at the time, Jacob could clean, you know, over 300 pounds. And I'm pretty sure he fell 225. Because he was so spent after work. I remember he sat down in the chair and he went to get up. And you know how he has that drunk kind of like that.
Yeah.
He does that little like wobble when he's walking around. I was like, oh shit, this dude is bad off right now.
I remember doing it the first time. And I remember trying to squat clean. I remember trying to squat clean that bar. And I remember failing every squat clean.
Really?
And so I remember the second smoked. Time I did it, I was like, I am not squat cleaning. And so I just ended up power cleaning it.
Dude, speaking of being sore, Karen.
Dude, that has everybody
got me
messed up, boo. Dog.
Boo.
Everybody's bitching about that.
Dude, my legs are smoked right now. And it's more so, I think, because I don't wear Ollie shoes very often.
You wore them?
So I wore Ollie shoes for workouts.
Oh, your quad got pumped.
And so the bottom tier of my quad. Oh, man.
I bet.
I haven't worn Ollie shoes in so long. Like, I've worn them maybe since knee surgery, maybe once or twice. And we had did something a couple months ago, and I wore them. And then we had a workout that had wall balls in them. It was like wall balls and pull-ups and maybe something else. I was like, I'll just wear them for the workout. And we're doing wall balls in them. I'm like, oh, my God, these wall balls are so much easier.
Oh, yeah.
Ollie shoes on. And so we had front squats and we had Karen. And like, oh, yeah, I'm aware. And it helped. Like, I did the wall balls unbroken again. It felt great during the workout. But, man, I am paying the price.
The bottom quads hurting.
The bottom of my quads. Because, like, when you're – those Ollie shoes, you don't know what Ollie shoe is. So an Ollie shoe has an elevated heel. And so it allows you to stay in a more upright squat. Well, the more upright you get in a squat, the more quad dominant squat now becomes. And because of that, doing 150 reps in a more vertical squat than I normally used to, my quads are not happy with
toasted
me
up.
At all.
Dude, we had jump squats in the workout, in the warm-up yesterday.
Oh, boy.
And so it was funny because I was like, all right, guys, we're about to see who came Monday and who didn't. And so literally everybody that did Karen's like, 3 second negative on the first jump squat, and then everybody that didn't do Karen's just like hopping them out.
How were y'all Monday afternoon? Was it slow?
It was
for
slower.
A Monday.
It
for
was
a Monday,
slower. Yeah.
I figured that was gonna happen.
But I mean, I think 4 o'clock was our biggest class, so that's pretty. That'll tell you.
Yeah, because 5 o'clock's been pretty packed.
5 o'clock's been slammed.
And so, how was the Tuesday?
Tuesday was back normal.
Okay, so
yeah, it's pretty bad.
So we had a lot of sandbaggers.
Oh, yeah. Tuesday was like...
Did you have a lot of people said, I'm not doing that gay-ass workout?
Well, there's a lot of people that just either said, I'm not doing that again. Like, there a lot of the older people that have done CrossFit before were like, I've done this workout like 4 or 5 times, but I'm not going to do this workout. Which, like, I understand. They're like, I'm not going to PR. Why are we even going to come and do it, you know? But then a lot... But honestly, I love Karen. I think Karen's an awesome workout.
It's still a good workout.
It's a good workout. No matter if you've done it 4, 6, 7 times, like, it's still a good workout.
I think a lot of people, the worst part about that workout, honestly, if you really hate wall balls, you really don't like that workout, but it's the fact that you just don't get to go anywhere.
You're stuck.
You're just stuck in one spot for 150 reps, and so you're fighting some mental demons during that workout, especially if you really, really hate wall balls, and especially if you get, like, halfway, like 75.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh my God.
You're getting faster.
I'm just now halfway there. I cannot imagine doing another 75 of these. That I feared that was going to happen, though, when I programmed it, that you were going to have a lot of people. I say a lot of people. We're definitely going to have a handful of people who are like, I'm not doing that.
I feel like you get that on, like, the big named workouts. Like
the benchmarks.
Karen, Diane, Fran. Like, yeah. All those that are, like, known and, like, that they have the big stigma around it. Like, that's when you see your drop-off days. Just
we had a lot of people, though, who had never done that workout.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of people that never done that workout. Like, I mean, I asked every class that I coached that day, and I coached 5 and 6 that day, and both classes, like, I had probably 5 people in each class that at least never done
workout. I mean, it's been 3.5 years since we've actually done it. And so, I mean, you got to think how many people have been here for, you know, within that 3.5 year period.
Do you know how many times you've done Karen?
Me personally?
Yeah.
I want to say I probably have done Karen, I would say at minimum 5.
Okay.
I would say between 5 and 8.
5 and 8. I've done it 8 times.
8 times? Okay.
Because me and Trevor were talking about it, and I was like, Trevor, how many times have you done Karen? Because I remember specifically just at CSE that, like, 3 different times that we did it. And he was like, man, I don't know. And I go, you don't have a wad book? And he goes,
wad
book. Oh my God, I have my wad book.
Well, he sent me a picture of it.
Okay, so we were at the table looking at it.
Okay. It's like 14 minutes or 11 minutes?
11 minutes from like 2014. Yeah. And I was like, oh my God.
Daly had a wad book too.
That's crazy.
So wad book was, you had a, basically a workout journal that was made for CrossFits, for CrossFitters. That you could log your, you know, write down what you did that day, what your scores were, and you had sections of like Karen and Diane, you could go and write it in your max list. I had one. Kaylee used hers forever. This is before, you know, you had the apps.
You had anything like that.
That was all the fancy stuff now. So if you're an old school crosser, you probably had a wad book back in the day.
Dude, that he brought that book out and that brought me back. I was like, oh my.
Kaylee still has it.
Like, I still have all my
books. Pretty sure they might be in the closet. I had like probably 2 or 3 of them. And Kaylee used hers religiously for a long time. But, and also it depends on how you're classifying. Are you classifying just doing straight up Karen? Because so, there was an open workout from 2012.
Are you talking about double under one?
Yes. Yeah. It was like a 12-minute AMRAP, 150 wall balls, 90 double unders, 30 ring muscle ups.
Yeah.
Would you classify that as Karen? I wouldn't classify as Karen.
I'm going to say no, just because you're not attacking it.
The strategy's not the same. Attacking. Like, I'm not going to try to do it
the same. You're stupid.
I do remember doing that workout the first time I did it. That particular, it was like 12 point something. So we went to Alexandria and did it. You know how, like, back in the day, different boxes would host open workouts?
Uh-huh.
You know, like, Raging would host an open workout.
And so you would go out there.
Alexandria would host an open workout, and, you know, we'd have, like, a, you know, 40, 50 people. It was almost like a competition, so to speak, but there wasn't, and you just run heats of doing the open workout. So it was 150 wall balls, 90 double unders, 30 ring muscle ups. And I remember thinking to myself, like, oh, I'm pretty good at wall balls. Like, I'm just gonna see how far I can go the first time. I did like 90, and dude, I remember dropping that ball at 90, like, I'm fucked.
I'm not doing like, good on these ring muscle ups.
That was such a bad idea. And we're doing it. I remember it was the same because they I think they repeated it the next year.
Did they?
I think it was back-to-back years. They did as a repeat. But I remember doing it again a couple days later. I don't remember which year it was. I remember doing the workout and then redoing it a couple days later and my legs being super, super sore. But I was like, screw it, I'm just going to redo it and see how it goes. And that was like one of the times the wall balls I felt the best in my life.
Really?
I remember doing sets of 25.
Okay.
And 25 is like a 10-second break every set of 25. I remember how great they felt that day. But I think, I don't know if that was my second or third time doing Karen Unbroken. Because I did Karen Unbroken a couple years ago. And that's the first time I have ever done an Unbroken. And that was like one of my goals when I started doing CrossFit. I tried to do Karen Unbroken. And so, obviously, being post-knee surgery, that was something I was kind of, that's like,
that's a cool goal.
I was nervous about doing it because I wasn't really sure I was still going to do it. But, like I was telling somebody, one of the more impressive feats I've seen is doing, like Travis Mayer doing
the
Unbroken Karen with a 30-pound ball.
30-pound ball. That's like super impressive.
So impressive.
And if you've never done that before, just go pick that 30-pound ball.
It's such a humongous difference between a 30 and a 20-pound ball.
Yeah. You can just like move the 20 around. Like, you can catch the 20 bad and still be okay and like pull it back to center.
Yeah.
You catch that 30 wrong, like any like miss throw, like it's such a big deal, man.
Well, I feel like I can be, I feel like I can be dog shit tired of workout. Like,
you'd be
exhausted.
Lazy as shit and do a 20-pound wall ball.
And feel like I could do like at least a minimum of 15 on a wall ball, like being dog shit tired. If I do that with a 30, I'm maybe sometimes only getting 5 reps at a time.
5. Have you ever done it, have you?
I guess technically the next stage would probably be, if you're, I guess you're able to do Karen Unbroken, with a 20-pound ball, I guess the next stage would have to be...
I've done it heavy twice.
Oh, you done it?
I've done it twice. I did it I first started in CrossFit, like, because I loved wall balls and handstand push-ups, so I just did the shit out of them. And so I remember...
Typical.
I remember doing heavy carrying because I was just like, well, let's just see how it goes. It's not fun. It is not fun.
Do you remember how long it took you?
I think the first time I did
over 10 minutes?
It was like 14 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think I did the second time, and I think I was like around 8 minutes. Like,
I would say she cracks up 10.
Yeah, so you can... But the thing is, like, the ball drops. Like, I remember when I got 8 minutes, it was like, gotta pick that damn thing up. Like, you can't... You're gonna want to look at it the whole time. Mm-hmm. And every time you pick it up, it gets heavier and heavier and heavier, dude.
I wonder, like,
I wish I could do it on target though. I remember doing it on
the wall. Oh, target makes
like
a difference.
I wish at a target because it would come back to me at least the same way every time on a target.
After you start using a target, it's so
it's
much
so hard to move it back to a wall.
It is.
It really is.
I feel claustrophobic on a wall.
Yeah.
Now, and like you said, I feel like on the target you get that little bit of that ricochet off that kind of helps get that rebound to come back
down.
You don't
have to worry about it. You just know if I throw it and I hit where I need to hit, it's coming right back to where I.
Because I thought about, like, after I did carry it on Monday, I had thought about, okay, if I were to do 30-pound carry, because there's a little piece of me that's kind of like, I wonder how many reps I can even do unbroken. Even though that would be the best strategy.
Yeah.
Like, just seeing
just
how far
like
I could
see
go.
See how far you
can. Because I don't know if I could do, I don't know, and, like, I don't know if I'm selling myself short or give myself too much credit. Like, I don't know if I could crack 75.
You don't know if you can.
Like, I don't know if I give myself even too much credit, even say 75.
I bet you could get 75. I bet you could get 75.
Like, I know for sure I couldn't crack 100. But 100. I'm like, I feel like 75 is like maybe the tipping point for me.
I bet you could hit 75. I'm going to say you could do 75.
So... It wouldn't be the best strategy, obviously.
No, God, no. I mean, you might hit 75 and be screwed.
I think if I was trying to choose the best strategy, I think I might do the 18 down to 7.
See, I wish I knew about that one today.
I think if I were to try to do the 30
pound
ball,
that would be doable.
I think trying to do the 18 down to 7 for the first attempt.
Yeah.
I think eventually you'd have to say, okay, I got to change up my strategy to try to, let's say your overall goal was to try to do unbroken Karen.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you'd have to start pushing the boundaries on how many. Reps you were doing at a time, you couldn't do the 18 down to 7. But if you're looking for just like trying to get it done for time and have a good time, I would probably, like, if this is a competition wad or like an
open,
I would probably do the 18 down to 7.
Matt's gonna bring the 30 pound ball out this year.
Oh, God,
good lord.
You got any predictions on that? New movements this year?
Any new movements?
You saw they were talking now, they do this every year for the open. They always talk about pistols.
I hope they don't.
They talk about that because Dave Castro was. I guess he was doing like a Q&A on mm-hmm. YouTube or something like that. And somebody had brought up the pistol and he was talking about, you know, the benefits and why pistols are so great essentially. And everybody's like, oh, they're going to do pistols in the open. I think they probably said pistols are going to be in the open for at least 10 years.
10 years?
At least for 10 years they have said pistols are going to be, like, not CrossFit, but everybody speculates pistols being in the open. And it never fails either. That freaking judges course we got to take every single year. That they always include pistols in the judges course and they've never thrown it in there.
I think now that they have the quarterfinals and everything, I would really hope that they would keep that for quarterfinals. I would hope so. I don't know. I don't want just no normal Joe Schmo that's never done a pistol doing 100 pistols in a workout. But at the same time, like, I remember being obsessed with pistols a long time ago. So, like, I get
like,
I get
you like them?
Yeah,
you like them?
I like them. I get both sides of it.
I get the reason why you would want somebody.
It's like, good to be able to do a pistol.
If you were able to do execute a very good pistol, it is a great movement in that sense, right? Where if you're able to have enough unilateral strength and balance and coordination and flexibility to pull off a pistol where it allows your foot to stay flat and keep the weight through the midfoot, you still can stay somewhat vertical in the position. And you're able to utilize your glute and hamstring properly to count up out of the squat without your knee tracking too far forward, I think is a great movement. But for most people...
How often, though, do you see that?
Exactly, right? Especially if you're doing it under speed and rest.
Like, if you're doing them in a workout, at least... I mean, every coach can testify to this, I think. the amount of good pistols you see to the shit pistols you see are night and day.
Well, you're having people like cock out their leg off to the side, and they're kind of like hinging, they're kind of rocking to the side, they're getting on the ball of the foot.
Have you ever seen the shrimp squat method?
What do you mean, like, turn the, like, hold your foot behind, like you do the warm-ups? Like,
but, like, they, I don't remember what games that, they tried to do it, they didn't count it, they didn't, they, like, disqualified.
Well, I think they say your foot has to be in front of you.
It has to be in front
of you. Can't, like, so, your heel and, like, the leg in front that's not squatting cannot touch the ground.
Cannot touch the ground, but this person was, like, sending her foot, like, back behind her to almost, like, it's like
a... Oh, like a, I call it like a dragon squat?
Like, kind of like a dragon squat, and they looked good, but, like, at the same time, it looked weird as shit. But I remember she had to redo it and do like normal pistols.
No,
they didn't want. They wouldn't allow.
Well, just like the first, I don't think they verbalize it anymore. But if you go back and look at the old school, it has to be a forward facing double under.
Oh, so you can't go like backwards? Wow, I didn't know that either.
So apparently, I would have to assume if you were able to learn how to do double unders backwards, it would be easier. Or they would not put that in the rule books because Josh Bridges back in the day learned how to do double unders backwards.
Really?
And he had to relearn them from the open and do them forwards. And I would have to assume the only reason why they would say that is because it's harder to do it forward than backwards.
Huh. We should make somebody learn how to do them backwards.
It's kind of mind-boggling. I can't remember the last time I've actually done a backwards jump rope.
Backwards?
I need to do that.
That'd be fun. That'd
it's
be
like
fun.
Coordination, backwards jump roping.
One other thing. Did you see all the Andrew Hiller stuff?
About what?
You didn't see all that?
Well, I know he said he can't do the open.
He can't do the open? Well, he like apparently like sitting was telling about it yesterday. He just like kind of was trying to like prove a point or whatever and said like, I'm on performance enhancing drugs, blah, blah, blah. Like I'm going to be forward about it. I'm going to sign up for the open anyway. And I promise they're not going to like.
No, Dave Castro.
Dude, boom, gone. Like he's not able to do it. And I was like, huh. That's kind of nuts.
Well, he's on TRT.
TRT.
Right? Like, openly talks about him being on TRT. And so, obviously, that being a performance enhancer of some kind, even regardless if you have low testosterone, it's still a performance enhancer. And you can, if you're listening to this getting triggered, then... And the reason being for that is that when you're on TRT, you're able to regulate your testosterone levels at an even rate consistently across the board. So if I have a 700 testosterone level, I can now maintain a 700 testosterone level regardless of what I do compared to somebody who maybe has a natural level of 700. They don't maintain a level of 700. They're going to fluctuate throughout the day, throughout the weeks, throughout the months, depending on what their stress level looks like, what their sleep looks like, what kind of training they're doing, all these things are variables that will affect their testosterone levels compared to somebody who's able to regulate that on a consistent basis, regardless if you have low testosterone. That's where the performance enhancement comes into play. That's the reason why you get disqualified for that. But no, I saw that. I saw that he had gone on Instagram and said he was not able to participate this year in the Open.
One of the comments was, that was the cheapest drug test you've ever done.
Oh, man. I guess it's in Dallas this year, right?
Yeah.
And they don't have a title sponsor.
Wait, no one?
It just says the CrossFit Games this year. Okay. Well, their logo, is just, which is an ugly logo, but it's just the CrossFit Games.
Huh.
There's no, like, it's not the Noble CrossFit Games or about CrossFit Games.
I wonder if somebody's going
to
get on that.
Well, no, like, GoRuck is the quote-unquote big sponsor of the CrossFit Games this year.
But it's not GoRuck.
But it's not the GoRuck CrossFit Games. It's just, they're just a... I think they signed on, so I guess they redid the contract to where I think they're like the official apparel shoe supplier of the CrossFit Games.
So like at the CrossFit Games, there's going to be GoRuck signs everywhere.
Sure, and you're going to get commercials and things like that, right? And they'll have a humongous booth. And I'm sure they'll make the uniforms this year for the CrossFit Games. And then obviously they'll probably supply the athletes with shoes and stuff like that if they want to wear them.
That's tough.
You hate those shoes.
I fucking hate those.
I haven't
seen
them in person.
Oh, they're hideous.
But yeah, so they'll be the official supplier of the CrossFit Games, but they're not the title sponsor. And did you see Noble?
Dude, Tom Brady?
Yeah, they're like partnered with Tom Brady or something like that.
He's like one of their newer sponsored athletes.
Well,
and not
he
just
has,
Tom Brady, like all the TB12.
Yeah, so people. Like TB12, like it's a, so it's like a, Is it like an athletic training gym?
Kind of. It's, I think it's like a group, right?
Well, I didn't know if it was like a sports-specific gym.
Oh, I don't know if they have their own gym or own whatever.
I don't exactly know what TB12 is.
But I know they have like TB12 athletes.
Okay. Like, I didn't know TB12 was like a... like, they have some franchises that are very much like... It's all about sports-specific training, right? Football, basketball, whatever it may be. And it's like, that's what those training... And usually, it'd be like in a big city that you would see something like this. I didn't remember if that's what it was. And I think they also have, like, their supplement brand.
Brands.
Or something like that. So, apparently, they're all, like, combining forces, I guess.
That's pretty cool, though.
Which is good for Noble.
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, you get somebody like Tom Brady, like, I imagine your stock's going up.
Well, I definitely took a hit. I think them dropping the ball with how they did with the CrossFit games.
Yeah.
I don't think they... And I think a lot of people who do CrossFit have... a lot of people badmouth them now, it seems like.
Really?
Well, I know, like, Andrew Hiller does a lot.
Yeah,
and a lot of
really bad mouths everybody.
Yeah, and I think like in Ritrani, Basmalsum and things like that. And they also took a lot of flack was when they said they were going to do the athlete jerseys, and then like for instance, like you could buy an athlete's jersey.
I do remember that whole thing.
Yeah, so I don't know if that was last year or the year before, but you know, one of the six was, you know, if Kel made the CrossFit games and then I wanted to buy a Kel LeBove or a CrossFit games jersey for him. CrossFit basically was like, okay, well, if you buy his jersey, we'll give Kale a certain percentage of that revenue off the jersey, right? And they would hike up the price of the shirt where, you know, if it's a $50 shirt, you had to buy it for $80 now. But a percentage of that would go to you in your pocket. Well, I think two things happened. I think one, you bought the jersey and it didn't even come in time for the CrossFit games. So you couldn't wear it to the CrossFit games if you're going to support somebody. And then two, I don't think they ever paid them.
No?
I don't think they ever paid them.
Oh, my. That's tough. And especially for a big company like that that lies about stuff like that. You're going to lose some people.
Yeah, so I think that was a little bit of the thing that happened with them that kind of put them on the downhill, okay, so to speak. So I guess that's enough bullshit for this podcast.
We're done?
I think we're done deal.
Got to be at least an hour on that one.
Well, combined, we had the phone call plus this.
Plus this one?
So we're probably over an hour now in total time. Or right around an hour.
Okay.
So, So next time we'll have to talk about the scaling. We didn't really get into the whole scaling protocol.
Scale? Okay, we'll talk about that.
We'll have to talk about that next podcast. All right. Later, guys.
See you.